We often hear of satellites failing or rockets exploding. These represent an enormous loss to their owners. Can this loss be insured? Andrew Rennie spoke to Mr. Kirby Eichen of GIO Reinsurance in his Sydney office.
Can you actually insure a satellite?
Yes, most certainly. Satellite, just as with any other piece of property or equipment, is valuable to its owner and in this case is producing a stream of income, and hence it has to be insured to make sure that somebody doesn't go out of business if it fails. Basically, you can insure a satellite when it's being launched, when it's being tested in orbit, or when it's actually in orbit. And in fact, GIO insures all of those phases of a satellite's lifetime.
So our Australian companies are actually involved in insuring overseas satellites?
GIO is actually one of the 10 biggest in the world in terms of the net insurance. I won't try to explain the term net, but suffice it to say we carry a fairly substantial portion of a satellite while it's in orbit, or the risk associated with it.
So every time we read in the newspaper or here on Southern FM about a Ariane exploding, for example, you've lost some money?
In fact, we did. We were insuring one of the Japanese satellites on the Ariane failure last year. Fortunately, we didn't lose too much money on that because the Japanese tend to insure their own satellites very much themselves. Satellite business is a very international business, with satellites costing up to $150 million, in fact, even more than that in some cases. You'll find that no one satellite is insured by one insurance company. In fact, you'll have dozens of companies insuring the one satellite, and hence a company like GIO might take a couple of $1 million or several $1 million off that $150 million. In the case of the Japanese satellites, it was mostly taken up by the Japanese market.
So very much like shipping insurance.
Yes, that's right. No one company could afford to bear a $150 million loss in one go, not on something as specific as satellites, because there are very few of them launched. It doesn't give you a good spread of risks. And it's fairly difficult to have good statistics on satellite launches. I mean, there are very much fewer of them than there are of cars or ships.
So what is the launch failure rate? For example, if you're insuring the launch phase, what's the approximate failure rate at the moment?
I guess we'd say in a generic sense it's about 12%. That varies from vehicle to vehicle. The Delta is probably the best of the lot, has the best success rate. Of course, you never believe the manufacturer's failure rates because they're always taking into account more things than an insurer would, but the Delta would be the best. Ariane is probably the second best. The Atlas is probably the third. Of course, if you want to look at the Zenit, which is the proposed vehicle for Cape York, it's probably got the best flight rate of any of the launch vehicles, though of course it's never been launched. It's never been used to launch commercial satellites, and it's never been launched in the version that would be used at Cape York.
I see. And can satellite operator buy insurance for the separate phases of the operations, launch, in-orbit operations and check-out, and then finally the operational phase, or do they have to buy the whole lot at once?
It's usually separated into two phases, one which is called the launch cover, which will be from intentional ignition of the rocket through till the end of the in-orbit commissioning of the satellite, and that means the launch phase is until the satellite is separated and put from its launcher and put into orbit. There's then usually a 180-day test period, and you'll find that that entire period from intentional ignition through to the end of the commissioning will be one launch cover, and then the in-orbit phase will be insured separately, usually on a year-to-year renewable basis. And of course you'll find that the satellite may not be insurable for its entire life, and hence as it gets closer to the end of its life, people won't be as willing to insure it.
And does every commercial satellite operator take out insurance, or do some just take their own risk?
These days, most companies would take out insurance. A couple of years ago, the insurance rates were much higher, around the 25% and closer to 30% rates, which is 30% of the insured value of the satellite. Once the rates got up to that point, a lot of satellite operators were simply deciding it wasn't worthwhile insuring their satellites. Intelsat is another example of a company that doesn't, or consortium perhaps is a better term, that doesn't insure its satellites. Although having had one failure last year, they have now been looking at partial insurance, and some of the countries that make up Intelsat are insuring while others aren't. So it's kind of a hybrid.
So Intelsat operates, what, 20, 30 satellites?
It may well have done that in its lifetime. I'm not sure how many would be operational at the moment. I think they tend to buy constellations of 5 to 7 satellites at a time. So I surmise that are how many would be in orbit at once.
And the organisation itself doesn't take out insurance, but individual countries can.
That's right. In the past, it has taken a basic decision not to insure, but given the failure of the last satellite, or the failure of it to be placed into orbit correctly, they have suggested to some of their member countries that they might like to take out insurance. Now, most of those countries have decided not to, and we're seeing maybe 25% of the value of the satellite actually being insured.
Right. And this Intelsat satellite that failed, the most recent failure, is the one that was launched on a Titan commercial.
That's right.
Failed to separate from a vehicle initially, and is now in a low Earth orbit, and is going to be the first recovery mission for the new Space Shuttle Endeavour.
That's right. In fact, it's been a very interesting insurance placement because it's quite different to anything else that we've seen in the past. It's, I think, worth about $140 million, the insurance package. That would be the insured value of the satellite. As I say, only 25% of that is being taken up. But it's quite different what we're being asked to insure there. There are a lot of different risks associated with it. Not only is there the risks associated with the shuttle in manoeuvring around the satellite and the people working near it, but the satellite is also in orbit being exposed to the hazards of space for a year before it's being refurbished or relaunched, and nobody really knows what might happen to the satellite during that time. So it is quite an unusual insurance placement.
So in general terms then, just take that as a particular example, how would an insurer go about assessing the risk of such an operation?
That's a very good question. In our case, we're not what they call a lead underwriter. There will be a lead underwriter somewhere around the world, usually London or the US, and that particular lead underwriter will be the one who sets the terms and the conditions and the rate of the policy. And we don't have a great deal of say then in determining what kind of rate, and hence we just follow the market. That doesn't mean to say that we're ignorant about how the market is, or the rate is assessed. Obviously we need to know, have our own sort of feeling for things. In some cases it's more of a gut feeling for how something is done. You can't put a specific figure on any one component of the risk. The shuttle, you know, has a specific failure rate. Most of the other hazards, you really just have to take a stab in the dark almost, based on our own knowledge of the industry, the kind of things that are involved in it. I really can't say anything more specific than that.
Okay. And what about our own national satellite operator, OSSAT? Did they take out insurance for their initial OSSAT A series? And do they intend to take out insurance on their OSSAT B series, which is due for launch
early next year, I think? Yes, in both cases, they took out insurance on the first generation, and in fact, it was the first generation of OSSAT satellites that brought us into the market. We were the leaders on the Australian leaders on the first generation of OSSAT satellites, and we would hope to be again for the second generation. We have recently looked at the insurance package for OSSAT. It's a little bit different in that Hughes, the manufacturer of the satellites, place insurance on a number of their satellites. So there's one insurance placement being done by Hughes, and there is also an additional package of insurance being done specifically for OSSAT, and we would give our maximum insurance line to the OSSAT satellites. In fact, they will be the biggest risk that we have taken to date.
I understand that at the time that OSSAT left the contract for the B series, that it was a rather unusual purchase, and that it was purchased in orbit. Most satellites until then had been bought on the ground, and then the new owner of the satellite had then taken the risk of launching it. But in GALSAT's case, they're buying it in orbit, is that correct?
That's right. It was, as I recall, the first instance anywhere in the world of that happening. The satellite is essentially, as you say, purchased in orbit rather than from the manufacturer, and hence the risk of getting the satellite into orbit really rests more with the satellite manufacturer and the launch vehicle manufacturer than it does with OSSAT. Nevertheless, OSSAT does have other expenses which it needs to cover, and that's why we have these sort of two insurance policies covering the one satellite: the Hughes package, which covers the launch and getting it up to orbit, and then the extra expenses which OSSAT might incur, being the second coverage.
Not least of which would be loss of income.
Loss of income. There are also some other costs associated with purchasing a new satellite. It's a somewhat unusual arrangement that Hughes produced sort of the basic spare spacecraft, but they don't build it completely to OSSAT's requirements. It's there on the production line in case somebody else needs it, and there would be extra costs in bringing that satellite up to the capabilities required by OSSAT.
And the OSSAT B series is going to be launched by a Chinese vehicle, the Long March 2E. Now, does that present you with any particular problems?
That's another interesting question. Last year we had the first commercial launch of a satellite on a Long March, and that was the AsiaSat 1 satellite. Now, strangely enough, that particular launch was heavily oversubscribed by insurers, indicating that they had a great deal of confidence in the vehicle, or that they felt very comfortable with the insurance rate being offered. And given that the rate being offered wasn't really that much higher than the going rate, I think it indicates that most of the insurers in the world are fairly comfortable with it. I should point out, though, that the AsiaSat was a refurbished satellite, and hence there was a slightly greater risk with the satellite itself. But nevertheless, I think it shows that there was a good level of confidence in the Long March vehicle, and I think that'll be reflected again with the OSSAT placement.
Well, for the sake of your business, Kirby, we'll hope that all goes well in the space business, and we don't have any of those dramatic headlines that newspapers seem to love. Thank you very much for joining us today on Southern FM.
It's a pleasure, Andrew.